Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Superhero Speak. I know some of you are expecting our Iron Man 3 special. Unfortunately, not all of us, John, have seen the movie yet, so that one's going to have to wait. In the meantime, we did get together and talk about some other things. In this episode, we start off with a rant from John. Apparently, he really doesn't like Hans Zimmer. Also, we discuss who's better, Batman or Iron Man. Listen to our arguments and see if you agree. Finally, we talk about the new set pictures from Amazing Spider-Man 2 that show Emma Stone dressed in a iconic Gwen Stacy outfit. If you've seen the pictures, you know what we're talking about. Here we go.
That's it. Hans Zimmer. Zimmer.
He's like writing a lot of things now.
Yes, but there's a huge difference between him and Williams. There's no comparison.
Is he the one that did the Amazing Spider-Man as well?
I think so. He did a lot. He did Kung Fu Panda and let's see.
We're actually recording.
Is it going to be part of the show?
We can make it part of the show. We can have an official start.
And so here's our show today.
We can go, hey, welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
Ben.
John.
There you go. Now it's officially started. Does it feel better? Does it feel more official?
Well, I just wasn't sure what we were talking about. He just was randomly...
Well, we're talking about composers for movies.
Yeah.
And I agree that Zimmer's not bad, but he's no Williams. But
yeah,
who was Williams?
Today's topic is Hans Zimmer, most evil man on the planet, or Hitler?
I'm not sure I could categorize him as either, per se.
Antichrist or Hitler. Those are your only choices. No,
Why are we categorizing him as evil? He's a composer. He's not...
I know. And you know what? He's done so many things. He's done Kung Fu Panda, Megamind, Inception, Sherlock Holmes, and...
Megamind, there you go.
Yeah. Now, but the thing is, there's a huge difference between Hans Zimmer, where, and granted, the music blends incredibly well into the action.
Mm-hmm.
The theme songs are very good. You know, Kung Fu Panda is awesome. But then you think Superman, and you hear the John Williams tune,
right?
And
it's
you're
iconic.
Done.
Yeah.
It's like if you close your eyes and you listen to Williams' music for Star Wars. Raiders of the Lost Ark, for Superman, you see the characters and the storylines.
But how much is that the filter of our own perception of those? I mean, I think that there's, because it's not, those aren't the only things he's done. Obviously, he did those iconic themes, but he's done themes to numerous movies, which, you know, are less memorable. You know, very few people consider. It's iconic in its realm, but Jurassic Park theme is not really considered an iconic theme, and yet John Williams was responsible for that.
Sure.
Although he has also been responsible for other iconic things, such as the Jaws theme music and E.T.
So it's the inherent issue in reboots, right? I mean, we've grown up listening to the John Williams Superman theme, and when we see the S, that's what plays in our heads. So now when there's going to be new music, it's like, oh my God, it's evil!
It is going to be a bit of a dissociation there. But at the same time, there have been other medias that have successfully moved past that. I mean, look at Star Trek. You know, the Star Trek theme, I don't even know who wrote the original Star Trek theme.
Right.
But they've managed to enhance it and to move beyond it and make it and transform it into other things without tying it to a single composer.
But the original Star Trek music was definitely a product of the 60s. It's not like that would transform.
No, and I'm not comparing Star Trek to Star Wars as far as the themes, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even with the Star Wars themes... Yeah, theme song. It was transformed for the new trilogy to some degree. And granted, I think John Williams was still involved in that. Other composers could have just as well done that. Because there's variations on the theme for different moods, for different types of characters. Like, obviously, there's the Darth Vader march that is very iconically only associated with Darth Vader. And you really didn't hear that to any great degree in the new trilogy, in the prequel trilogy, because he wasn't really Darth Vader yet. But it also felt less like a Star Wars movie, I think, because of that. You expect that music to play some point in each movie.
Right, and I think it's, you know, speaking as somebody who actually studied music composition, it's so funny.
Ooh.
Who's that?
Is that a new superpower that we I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because, like, what a lot of composers do when they're writing themes is they'll actually just take the word and how many syllables it is, that's how many notes it is. You know, if you really think about it, like, the Superman theme, it's Superman. Like, that's, you know, there's you know, pieces in
yeah.
it. And it's funny, like, the Darth Vader theme is definitely something that's, the whole point of that is it's a driving beat and it's building tension. Because
right.
it's like you're dreading Darth Vader coming, and that's the whole point of it. It's not like, oh my God, it's such a great iconic piece of music because, you know, John Williams is a great composer, like he is, but it's also, it's making you like, oh my God, like the first time you heard that when he walks out
right,
onto the,
he walks in. Yeah.
On the ship, Princess Leia's ship, it's like, you know, there's this character that's like, I've got to watch out for him, you know, and that's what sets
yeah.
the mood, you know.
True.
But yeah. like you said, we've grown up with, like I said, you know, we grew up with that, and it's like, but Zimmer's not evil.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't quite agree with
that. I mean, I say it jokingly, but still, it's just, there are a couple of YouTube recomposed trailers for Man of Steel that use the original Williams music, and just, you know, even... I mean, maybe it's hard to dissociate myself with, you know, having seen the original Superman in 78 and all that and being able to remember it because I'm old. But it still seems to get your blood flowing a hell of a lot better than the current music that you hear in these trailers.
I think the problem is, and maybe you realize this, you're fanboying.
No. A fanboy? Really?
And it's so funny, you know. Not to get onto the topic, but Iron Man 3 came out this weekend. Two of us have seen it.
One of us haven't. Yeah, well, yeah.
And not to ruin anything about the movie, but, you know, I've been looking at comments online, and there's people really hating on this movie right now. And they have their reasons, but they're very fanboyish reasons for hating on it. It's like, I think you have to look past that stuff.
Yeah, I read the comments too. A lot of it's really funny on Fandango. The comments, it's like you'll get like five must goes, and then you'll get a oh my god, this sucks.
Right? Very few like middle of the road people.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And when you say the fanboy ones, the ones that were like the fanboy ones, just seems like really nitpicky about what they're looking for. I mean, you gotta make some allowances for a sequel. And, you know, wow, they made it a little bit more serious from what I've heard because, yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but to speak without speaking specifics, you know, anytime you go into a movie with high levels of expectations, you should expect that you're going to get let down in some capacity. It's a given. And that's why you have to go in there with a certain level of disbelief and a certain level of acceptance that there's going to be surprises, that there's going to be departures from what you might expect that
right.
film to be. And without that, you're just going to put yourself in a situation where you're going to be let down.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true.
What disappoints me the most is we're finally going to get a real Superman movie, by all accounts, that will have a hell of a lot of action, and you won't hear those rising crescendos while Superman punches somebody the hell across the...
I don't know if
the,
you know that yet, though.
The Earth,
I think that you're like, presuming something based on the trailer. And
right.
You may actually hear... It may not be the same in the same form. It may not be the same iconic, you know, John Williams, you know, crescendos and carriage, but the emotions are going to be handled, and the action is going to be addressed.
Oh, and
in the music,
yeah,
yeah, because like the one trailer, where they have the planet blowing up, but yet it's this real slow music playing in the trailer. And I think because in that trailer, they're trying to set a specific mood.
Right. Well, yeah, the original trailers were very... They made you thought that this was going to be another Superman Returns where it was just kind of angsty.
But I think the music in the trailer is trailer music, and it's not indicative of the music that's going to be playing in those scenes in the movie.
Yeah. And by all accounts, people have seen like the
test footage and pre-screening.
They've all absolutely loved it. They're basically saying this is what a Superman movie should be.
Yeah.
You know, huge battles. Yeah,
right.
And some good stuff.
So. But the thing is, if they're saying that, I think that's somewhat of a testament to the fact that they probably got the music right as well. Because if you get the music wrong in a movie, it definitely impacts the tone and, you know, the feeling of the movie as well.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm not saying Zimmer is bad at that, because you look at some of the movies he's done, like Kung Fu Panda and, you know, all these others. It's just, while you're there watching the movie, the music really fits. I mean, it's not one of those ones where you're sitting there watching the action going, well, why are they playing that? You know, it's...
He's really good. It matches the tone that fits that
But
scene.
It's just, it's not iconic. Perhaps not. But we'll see, you know, because the movie hasn't come out
yet. I also think it's a difficult job, too, because... music, as Ben's pointed out quite a few times, it has to convey the emotion of the scene. And sometimes there's nothing going on in the scene other than the emotion that the director wants to portray there, right?
Right.
So you might have a shot of Superman's face and he's thinking about, you know, his home planet that's destroyed. So now Zimmer has to write a piece of music that makes you feel that when you're looking at his face.
Rolls down his cheek.
Right, but, you know, it's a very difficult job.
Right.
Although
I think to John's point to a degree, thinking about the recent stint of these superhero themed movies and sci-fi movies in general, you know, whereas I think that in the Iron Man movies and even in the Spider-Man movies and the Batman movies and all of these movies, the music seems to capture the emotional state very well. I couldn't tell you what the theme music to Dark Knight sounds like. I couldn't tell you what the theme music to Amazing Spider-Man is. Whereas I can hum the Star Wars theme, the original Superman theme.
Right.
You know, those themes are ingrained and in your head.
When the movies originally came out, you came out of those theaters humming those tunes.
Right.
That's true.
I whistle the Vader march as I go to the bathroom most of the time, which I'm not sure what that says
that
about
you?
Me exactly.
Oh,
yes.
Geez.
Is that part of your origin story? Because I don't think I want to hear that part.
He's just dreading what's coming out. I don't know. Something with age.
Okay.
Just feel the need to choke someone.
Or not the chicken.
Not here.
So we've talked enough about Man of Steel because...
Yeah, we've hit that one a few times now.
Yes.
I think we can move on.
That was my rant. I'm done.
Sure.
I got nothing else.
Did you guys see the pictures online of Gwen Stacy in the new Amazing Spider-Man movie?
No.
There were new set pictures that were revealed.
I did see those.
Is she going to die?
Well, I think most of us knew that was going to happen anyway, because it's part of her arc. It's part of her origin story. The death of Gwen Stacy is an important death in the story of Spider-Man. It's one of those iconic deaths, along with with Uncle Ben, that creates who Peter Parker and who Spider-Man are. They're defining, you know, iconic moments in his life. So to do the origin story that they did in Amazing Spider-Man and expect that they're not going to kill her off within one or two more movies would be naive.
But they'll do that, but they won't cover the molestation.
To back up for a second.
It's true. There was child molestation.
There was a lot of things in the comics that don't really need to be rehashed in the theaters.
Please don't go there.
This is what I get for reading Cracked. Go ahead.
To back up the pictures that I'm talking about, she's wearing the green coat, the purple miniskirt, the black shirt,
and the boots, very iconic
image.
But here's my only contestation to that, if that's a word, I'm not sure.
word of the day.
So I haven't looked into this, so I'm saying this completely, you know, off the cuff.
But it's a fact.
So yes, that outfit that she's wearing and those stills does perfectly match the outfit that she was wearing when she was killed in the comics. But traditionally in comics, characters tend to always wear the same clothes. So those could be the same clothes Gwen Stacy was depicted in all the time in the comics. So they're sort of focusing on those are the clothes she wore when she died, but those could also have been the clothes she wore all the time. Now granted, it's still likely that the reason they put her in that outfit
to foreshadow that
event is coming.
Also the fact that, you know, it's not the outfit she was wearing in the last movie.
That's true, because in real life people don't wear the same clothes every single day of their lives. Except Dave.
And Einstein, don't forget. So you're in good company.
Yes.
It was, obviously the online community went into an uproar.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. But, like you said, it was coming. Like, you can't have Gwen Stacy and not kill her, unfortunately.
Right. And they've already set that rolling into motion by, you know, obviously they killed, you know, Ben Parker in the first movie. And they killed Captain Stacy.
Right.
So they've gotten two out of the three important, you know, and permanent deaths in Spider-Man's life out of the way. Yeah. It's a natural progression that Gwen Stacy would come next.
Right. And it's funny because there's actually a list. I can't remember what website it's on. And she's on the list as one of the only few people in comic books that stayed dead.
Yeah. Those are probably the three.
Well, and you know.
There may be
Batman's
a
parents.
Handful of others. Yeah, Batman's parents.
Superman's parents were back and forth, though. He lost his dad, then he didn't lose his dad, and then there was some kind of alternate reality where Supergirl came in who was actually not Supergirl. I remember they kept bringing them back and then putting away, and then the live-action series, they had them back.
So now he's
his mom again.
I always found it interesting that his dad dies in, like, all the movies, it seems.
Yeah.
But
and on the TV show, or the last one.
And Smallville he died, but in the Lois and Clark series,
yes,
he was alive through the whole series.
Yep.
Yeah, they could never make up their mind. Is Paul Kent dead or alive?
Yeah.
You tell us, viewers.
Well, that was supposed to be one of those iconic things. That was one of those iconic things where, you know, with all my power, I could not save him. That was, you know, that was his, you know, with great power, great responsibility moment.
Yeah.
But
he could save Lois from death, so why couldn't he save his father?
Why couldn't he kill his father?
Save. You know what I meant.
Because Paul Kent raised him better than to kill him.
But no, couldn't he have done the flying around the earth, spinning back time?
Because he didn't fly yet at that point in the movies.
Perhaps. But if he cared enough.
Yeah, let's just forget the whole flying around the earth thing. Because
obviously. It was
even the physics
stunt.
Of it is.
No. You reverse the spin of the Earth, all you do is reverse the direction that the sun rises and sets, not actually turning back time.
That is the biggest Deus Ex Machina of all time.
Yeah.
Even in the Donner, the Donner cut, I forget how they were supposed to end it. I think they were supposed to end it with him spinning around the Earth or something, but they had to use the exact same sequence again to reverse all the crap that that Zod and company did.
And
but
from everything I've read, they did that on purpose because they wanted to tie the two movies together with the reversing of the time and everything. It's like, really? But did you really want to give the Superman the power to reverse time whenever he wanted?
That
could easily become an overused trope. It's like, Clark, you forgot to get the milk. The earth, go get the milk.
Clark, you remember the milk.
Clark, are you checking out Wonder Woman again?
Okay, that could go in several different bad places.
Perhaps.
But that's the whole thing with the DC Universe. They're all very overpowered. I mean, you know, Flash can vibrate through anything and just, you know, and travel through time.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, that's why I've always been more of a Marvel fan in general than a DC fan. The Marvel characters just seem more realistic, more grounded in reality. I mean, not necessarily in their powers, but at least in their mindsets. They're flawed individuals. They're identifiable people, and they live in the real world and deal with real world problems. You know, and also, you know, to a degree, like they seem to understand where that balance is. That, like, you know, the more powerful the character is, the more effed up the character typically is as well.
True.
Like, to balance that out. So you don't have these Supermen, necessarily, that exist in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, there was a... I wish I could remember the exact quote, where it was, in the Marvel Universe, trouble comes to the heroes, and in the DC Universe, they look for the trouble. Something like that. You know, yeah. I do think that's kind of true, you know, where, along what Ben just said, you know, in the Marvel Universe, the characters are flawed, and it's very, they quickly get themselves into trouble a lot of times.
True. Although I think a lot of trouble comes to Batman. I think he's not necessarily seeking it out most of the time.
Right. But there's always those iconic images of Superman hovering over the Earth.
Right, and monitoring for
things. Monitoring for anything that, right.
Yeah.
Action. Batman, though, he does go looking for trouble. I mean, what is he doing all night?
Oh, yeah, he's
looking for trouble.
Yes, he does patrol. But there's also plenty of people in his rogue gallery who will bring trouble to him, you know, regardless of his patrolling.
Yeah.
So there's the topic that I had suggested, and we could talk about this a little bit. If you were going to hang out, or if you were going to be teamed up with a superhero, would it be Iron Man or Batman?
Rich playboy philanthropist genius or moody guy who likes to hang out in a cave?
Who gets the props here? Who's the better character?
Well, I have to agree that I think that I would side with Iron Man. I think he's a more interesting character, more relatable, but also definitely an easier person to hang out with. I mean, whereas Batman has that playboy persona, it's a persona. That Bruce Wayne is a mask of sorts. He doesn't really act that way. Whereas Tony Stark is Tony Stark. You know, his billionaire playboy persona is really part of who he is and parcel to his personality. Makes him more interesting to hang out with.
So yeah. What Ben's saying is that there's more guarantee of actually getting tail.
Yes.
If you hang out with Tony
yes.
Stark.
Yes, absolutely.
Hang out with Bruce
that is,
okay,
that is, that is exactly what he is saying.
So.
Well, yeah, and I think...
But also, and looking...
Well, sorry. I actually, there might be more chance of getting tail with Batman.
Because he wouldn't take it from you.
Exactly. All the women would throw themselves at him, and...
Yeah, but I think Tony Stark could throw you a bone. He's the kind of guy that would... That would help you out because he's got throngs. He's got too many more than he can handle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But you know, but with the question, so that's in the more social aspect. But there's also the aspect of like, who would you want to have your back? And I think even in that case, I would probably side with Iron Man. Not that Batman couldn't. Obviously, Batman can clearly hold his own, and has a lot of gadgets at his disposal. I think Iron Man's gadgets seem a little more powerful, you know, at least in the fact that he has his full body armor, where Batman just sort of has, not that he doesn't have body armor, but it's not as functional armor. It's strictly something that he wears.
And that's true. And I think one of the other aspects along with that is they do a great job of portraying Tony Stark as a genius, and that he came up with the arc reactor, he came up with the armor, he created the repulsors.
The repulsor
right.
rays.
Right, so that it
and
gave him the ability.
Extremists and...
Right, but it gave him the ability to fly and all that. Where in the comic books with Batman, they don't always portray him inventing things, they portray him buying things. Or
right, buying things and to some extent, mechanically, you know, engineering things. as necessity requires it, you know, tweaking things and putting things together to make the tools and utilities that he has, but not all at his own. I mean, obviously in the movies, Fox had a huge part in that.
Right. Which I like. That is the best explanation of where he gets his stuff
right.
that they've had so far.
Because in the Tim Burton series, they had him like doing work on his own Batmobile all the time as a mechanic.
Right.
But, you know, there's only so far that can go, really, if you're doing that completely on your own, you know, with only Alfred as your potential, you know, helper with these things.
Right. And in the comics, they portray that from a young age, Bruce Wayne concentrated mm-hmm. on training, becoming a
right.
great fighter.
Physical, yeah, right, training and martial arts and things like that.
So when did he graduate?
To make himself a, exactly. Where did he fit in? I mean, yeah, he became the world's greatest detective. He became this, you know, fighter extraordinaire.
And a computer genius.
But yeah, where does all that, all those other things fit in? You know, there's no time for those things.
Wherein with Iron Man, it was like, well, he fell into, you know, the need with the arc reactor, you know, after he was an adult already.
Yes.
So the idea of the armor makes sense. It's like right. it makes up for all his physical lackings.
But he also has a history, both in his family lineage and in his own actions, of being a mechanical genius and understanding right. technology at a very high level.
Well, it makes him easier to write for, too. Because, okay, Iron Man gets into trouble. He either creates his own trouble or people come looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
With Batman, if anybody gets a jump on him, it's lazy writing. Because he's the goddamn Batman.
Right.
I mean, you know, they made him out to be this super genius that with an hour of planning could take down literally anybody in both universes.
Right.
So basically, you know, anytime, like Bane, you know, Batman should know from get-go that you stay away from Bane.
Right.
You know, it's long distance it's battle.
Right, it's not a tactical, you know, it's not a close combat fight that you take on.
Him. And at least freaking kick him with the bionic leg for crying out freaking loud.
Yeah.
I mean, don't go at him with your fisticuffs. He's Bane. You know he's jacked. What the right. heck, you know? So that's just lazy writing.
Right. But so, yeah, if I had the choice between, you know, walking down a dark alley with Bruce Wayne or walking down a dark alley with Tony Stark, I'd choose Tony Stark. Because I think that, you know, if we were to run into trouble, you know, Tony can improvise well and can probably, you know, remotely call his armor to him, you know, in a heartbeat and kick some ass.
See, I would actually disagree on that. If as standard, you know, Batman is, you know, he's basically a MacGyver guy, you know, so basically with less than nothing in a dark alley, he could probably
that's
take
true.
Out
he
guys.
Probably could hold his own because he does have those innate fighting skills, so yeah. he could actually manage to kick ass without any tools or toys at his disposal.
I think the other aspect we need to realize is that if we're hanging out with Batman and, you know, we become his sidekick, he's going to put us in a brightly colored suit and make us the target.
Yeah,
if we're hanging out with Iron Man, he's going to put us in a suit of armor with a machine gun and make us War Machine.
Right.
So I kind of think I'd rather be War Machine than Robin.
Probably.
I'll give you that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather not be a brightly colored, leotarded young boy.
Well, your armor might be brightly colored, but you have a Gatling gun
doing,
and
though.
Repulsor rays and
well, whatever. And think about it. Iron Man has the colorful armor, and War Machine is all gray
it's usually
and silver.
Green, yeah, silver and black, and
right, so
and stuff like that.
So there you go.
Recently,
argument settled.
So, Power Girl or Wonder Woman? No, never mind.
I don't know because either one of them could crush my head.
Avoid that.
So. You want to be able to let your wife listen to the podcast? Is that
probably good? And maybe even my daughter.
I was just suggesting which you to hang out with, not anything else. Yeah. Why would I suggest something untoward like that?
Wonder Woman definitely seems like a more interesting person to hang out with. I think. I don't know. Power Girl seems kind of. Questionable.
Yeah, but
I think she'd get me into trouble, and I'd rather avoid that.
See, the thing is, like, Wonder Woman's an Amazon, and, you know, she comes from a female-dominated society, you
right.
know, and kind of think that maybe that
which
would be...
was why we would fit in well, because...
Because we like to be
well,
dominated?
We are well dominated by our women already, so...
There you go. So. All right. Where, yeah, Power Girl is just a Kryptonian who... has very enormous breasts. I don't know.
Is she really? Because in some of her In some of the origin stories, she isn't. She's got several origin stories, if I remember correctly. In some, she was some kind of part Amazon, and others.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever read the one that said she was Kryptonian, though.
I always was under the impression that she was a variant of Supergirl, essentially.
She is the new Supergirl.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, spoiler for those who haven't read that yet.
I haven't read that.
Well, that was in Bruce Timm's, though. They had the older clone of Supergirl in a Power Girl suit.
Right.
So, you know.
Meh. Catwoman or Black Cat?
Well, it depends. If Catwoman's played by Anne Hathaway, then...
She seems like... Yeah, but she seems like she was a... That's actually one of the characters I liked in the newest Batman movie. I thought Anne Hathaway portrayed that very well. The Michelle Pfeiffer and Halle Berry versions were a little nutty.
Well, Michelle Pfeiffer was during the weird Batman movie.
Yes,
movies.
But it was still Tim Burton's helm at that point.
Can we just officially say that the Halle Berry version doesn't really exist?
Let's just pretend that never happened.
That's fine. It had a promising storyline, but it just didn't.
It wasn't Catwoman.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was Super
she was
Cat
imbued right. with the power of the cat.
Yeah,
but I do like Black Cat. Felicia Hardy's character I find very interesting because she's similar to Catwoman. She skirts that line
right.
of you know being you know she has the potential to be a hero, but she looks out for herself.
Right.
So can skirt that line of gray area and into crime a little bit for her own benefit. But also, you know, keeps Spider-Man on his toes. And I think that's
it's an admirable trait.
Yes. It takes a lot to keep Spider-Man on his toes.
I don't think it does.
Metaphorically,
okay.
Physically speaking, he's pretty much always...
On his toes. Yes.
And fingertips.
So, have either of you seen the death battle between Batman and Spider-Man?
I did watch it. Yeah. I watched it strictly so that I could be prepared to disagree with it if they got it wrong.
Oh, you're one of those.
And luckily, I did not have to because I just don't. No matter how much of a fan you might be of Batman and his abilities and his you know capabilities and tools and powers. He's still a person. He's an average person, an average human being. And whereas Spider-Man is, you know, proportional strength of a spider, can hold his own very well, and is equitably scrappy, as Batman is in those impromptu situations. So, just because he's that much stronger, I think he would. Easily,
well, that and the spider
take Batman
sense.
Down and spider, yeah, exactly. Spider sense neutralizes pretty much anything that Batman could do.
The only thing I disagreed with what they said was that they basically it was death battle, so neither one of them got prep time. But if they had prep time, I think Batman,
yes,
Batman,
and along those lines, exactly, because along those lines, one of the arguments is Batman has taken down single handedly every member of the Justice League. But he's done so by being prepared to do so.
Right. And
by having kryptonite on hand and by knowing all the weaknesses of all of the people in the Justice League because he's a paranoid freak and, you know, just is prepared for those types of things.
And another thing I think to point out is he prepares himself and puts himself in situations where he really doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, Batman's gotten hurt. Yes, he's gotten broken bones and everything, but...
Right, but he's always getting hit.
Spider-Man gets the crap beat out of him in almost every issue.
Pretty much,
And just keeps fighting. He doesn't give up, you know. So I would think Spider-Man has a higher endurance in that.
Oh, he's got,
as well.
He's got to.
Well, he's naturally got a higher endurance, but also just from experience has a much higher endurance because he gets physically involved in his fights a lot more. You know, Batman, works in the shadows and uses. Perception against his enemies as much as possible to avoid having a hit even land on him.
Until he tries to punch somebody who's, you know, five times stronger than a human and gets his back broken.
Details.
But, yeah.
Silly little details.
Yes.
But he came back from that.
Yeah.
Right. Against all odds.
Because he's the goddamn Batman.
Right.
With a raspy voice.
Hi, I'm Batman.
You'd think he'd have some throat lozenges in that utility belt.
You think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's...
And by the way, if you haven't seen, I want to say it's on College Humor, they have a series of these Batman parody videos parodying Batman through all of the recent stint of movies. And they're just hilarious. Like, they parody the whole voice thing. They parody, like, the rooftop scene with the girl and various other things. It's just definitely worth checking out. Some of them are not necessarily kid-friendly, just for those of you listening, but they are hilarious.
And one of the things that I heard pointed out before with the voice, it was an acting choice, right? Like,
right,
Christian Bale made that choice. Why he made the choice is beyond me to like, okay, you can have a different voice, but you don't need to...
It doesn't have to be a throat cancer voice.
Right, exactly. and when you... Conroy, what's his first name? Played him in the animated series.
Tim?
No, that's Tim. Anyway.
I know this of all of you.
Yeah, right. Anyway, Kevin Conroy.
Kevin Conroy, that's it. Yeah.
When he talks about it, he did the voice. He was like, well... Batman's voice is his voice. He's like, I'm a little more straight with it, but other than that, it's my voice. I go up to a higher register when I do Bruce Wayne, because in his mind, Bruce Wayne is the character and Batman's the real person. Bruce Wayne's the mask.
Right.
Right?
Although in the first season and a half of Batman the Animated Adventures, he did kind of do a raspy thing. Then he got it down and did it for the next 15 years.
But along those lines, the one thing I keep, and it's like, okay, so you made the choice. Let's talk about, the two differences. But the main thing is that in the scene in Dark Knight Rises, when he's on the roof with with Catwoman, and then she disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And the one joke that's in the whole movie, so that's what that feels like. But why did he do it in that voice?
Because there's no one around.
There's nothing else to surround. Why?
Because he's Batman, and he's paranoid, and he's not going to risk anyone hearing his real voice.
Well, that's a fanboy trying to justify.
And he's borderline schizo. When he puts the mask on, that's who he is.
Right. So. He dissociates himself from Bruce Wayne while he's got the cowl on.
I guess so. Yeah, but it was just like, I've heard a lot of comments on that, like... Yeah, wait a minute. He was alone. Why the heck did he? There was no need for that voice at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've always liked that Kevin Conroy aspect of it. And it's like, yeah, that makes the most sense to me. You know, given who Batman is and the fact that Bruce Wayne pretends to be a playboy, he puts on different airs so people disassociate him from Batman. It's like.
But it's the way Batman was also supposedly a master of disguise, and one of the things that you train for if you're going to do that kind of stuff is voice training. So being able, going up to the higher register, modulating a whole lot more, that's changing mannerisms and the inflections. Yeah, exactly. Excuse me, I got to do my Batman voice. I got to go gargle some caltrops. Thank you.
Did you study disguise in college? Is that what this is?
No, no. But I've seen Master of Disguise. Wait, did I just admit that?
Is that that Dana Carvey movie?
Yeah.
That was that
Turtle.
Horrendous Dana Carvey movie.
Yeah. It was completely by accident that I watched that.
Keep telling yourself that.
But every day.
While you're watching it?
No.
With the voice disguising factor, though, I mean, Batman obviously does it to the nth degree. I want to say that in the original Superman movies, Superman did it to a degree. It was more subtle, but there was an element of it. But you don't see a lot of other heroes doing that. Like, Spider-Man never really masked his voice.
Which it's funny. It would make the most sense for him to do it because he has interacted with a lot of people he knows while he's
Spider-Man. Yeah, but I think the reason... Well, I guess that's true over But, you know, there. I think what Spider-Man generally has going for him is that very few people even know who Peter Parker is. He's a nobody.
Right.
He's, you know, a photographer, you know, a contract photographer for a newspaper, so which people aren't going to know those people other than the people close to him in his life. You know, unfortunately, the people close to him in his life do keep coming across and getting involved in Spider-Man's activities against his better, you know, against his preference. But, and most of those people end up finding out who he is over time.
Right.
Like Mary Jane and Aunt May. But,
Aunt May found out.
There was a, at one point, yes, she did find out. But then I think when they did Brand New Day, she no longer was aware
right.
of his identity.
You know, the magic factor.
Yeah.
Right, but I guess you could also make the argument that he's wearing a piece of cloth over his face and it muffles his voice a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, but he's also one of the few superheroes that has the chance to have some kind of voice changer.
Exactly, and that's something like, that they don't really address directly in the comics, but they could have easily had that be part of the movie canon, and they never have to date.
But they did change how he does the webbing.
Yeah, but that's also gone back and forth in the comics. Like, there was, yes, traditionally, it was always mechanical that he engineered these web shooters. But even in the comics, there was a transition point where it became organic.
The other.
But they did that
in response to the movies, didn't they?
No, that was well before the movies. That was in the 90s.
It was the late 90s.
I
have the graphic novel at home, and
I have an image in my head of him coming out of some kind of cocoon.
Yes.
Yeah, I must have seen it at some point, but
is that after he fought and Kraven and was near death, or
not Kraven? It was another he was part of
some sort of spider space saga type.
Right,
thing.
Exactly. There was the Traveler, and then there was this other guy. It began with an M. I don't want to say Morbius because obviously that's the vampire.
Right.
But it began with an M, and they have this long fight. Like
right.
It goes on for days, and
in the end,
he rips Peter Parker's one eye out.
Yeah, it was very violent.
Very violent. Dark, very graphic.
And you, at the end, you think he's essentially dead, but he's not dead. He's essentially comatose. And
then he gets into a cocoon and he comes out and he's got a brand new body. And part of it is not only did he have organic web shooters at that point.
He also had heightened other abilities. Like
right.
He was able to see in pitch darkness and some other
stingers that came out of his arms, too, that were, like he could use like swords and just
right.
It really didn't
all of which
make any
got
sense.
Erased with the Brand New Day as well.
Oh.
Right.
So
retconning.
Yes.
Right.
I love it.
Right. So they got rid of the crap, but they got rid of stuff that people liked as well.
Right. I liked that transition. I think the organic web shooters makes more sense, personally.
Except because they were really...
Well,
if it was from the genetics, they would have been coming out of his, you know...
Right. But I think, like...
Nose?
Yes. That's
my issue with the comic idea that they actually addressed with the Amazing Spider-Man movie, with the web shooters. In the comics, it was always like, he gained these abilities, and he, you know, naturally came up with this formula on his own for what this spider silk stuff would be made out of, because he's so smart, and came up with these web shooters. And I would think, if you could come up with something of that tensile strength, you could be a millionaire.
Right.
And he could have been a playboy millionaire for
exactly.
a superhero.
But instead, he kept it for himself and used it, you know, for his webbing. But it just seemed just to one of these serendipitous things that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and them did at the time to say, all right, this is how he gets webbing. He just comes up with this, he sort of chemistry, comes up with this formula that works, and no one else seems to be ever the wiser. Whereas in the Amazing Spider-Man movie, it was actually an Oscorp technology that he stole and
it's so funny because and last, correct you on one thing, it wasn't Kirby, it was Ditko.
Okay.
And,
sorry.
Well, poor Steve Ditko never gets credit.
But
the other thing is, right, go back to Amazing Fantasy 15, where he's his origin story, right, when he's coming up with the webbing, one of the whole main reasons he comes up with the costume and everything is to do wrestling to make money,
right, yeah,
so that he could buy a car so that he could impress a girl and go on a date.
Right,
and
which like, is the storyline they did in the first Spider-Man movie,
right,
as well.
But if he just took the webbing
and sold it to some,
and
you know,
patented it,
right,
he would have had more than enough money to take, right, the girl on the date.
Sold that to Pfizer for, you know, for
it's you know,
$1 billion.
There's only so much suspension of disbelief. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. Let's,
right,
take a little logic out of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Just remember, if you want to create your own webbing, it has to be the My Chemistry 101 set for 13 and up, not 7 and up. For so, 7 and up, you might gain superpowers, but it's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
All you need is some uranium and a spider.
Or you could be near the chemistry set and be hit by lightning.
No, then you just run really fast.
Yeah.
You know?
And have, oh, to eat lots, God, of pizzas every day.
That is one of
the... That's Wally, not...
Can we... Yeah, can I just say that?
For as much as... The Flash show.
For as much as I...
It was Barry, yeah.
As much as I wouldn't even say I love The Flash, but as much as I used to... Actually, in all honesty, it was one of the first comics I collected when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have a few issues today, but... That is one of the absolute worst origins in comic book history.
Yeah.
Period. I'm,
yeah,
sorry. He got struck by lightning, and for the lightning
in
the pauses.
Chemistry lab.
Right, but the lightning pauses, and he can have the choice of being hit by the lightning or not. Like, what the hell were they smoking when they wrote that?
Yeah. But didn't they also end up later making that a loop where, like, he was in some sort of epic? Race battle type situation where he ended up running so fast that he couldn't slow down, turned into lightning, and struck himself back in time.
I don't remember that.
I don't know all the details, but I'm pretty sure that that was some storyline somewhere.
I will look that up, and if it is, I will post it on the website.
How does the speed, yes, force go into that? I remember that as a thread through some of the comics.
Yeah.
The
you know, people
force.
Make fun of Aquaman, but Flash is the,
yeah,
no
worst,
cause
superhero.
Aquaman, his superpower was being born him. That was it, you know?
Right.
It wasn't like anything.
So it's not his fault he was born at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. But at least you could, you don't sit there and laugh at him. Like, you,
right,
know, it's not, it the only thing that had to happen for him to be a superhero was his mother had to meet his father, and they had to get it on. That was it, you know?
Right.
And they actually kind of, in the new Injustice game, I don't know if either of you've played it or seen any of the cutscenes or anything yet, he's kind of a badass, Aquaman.
In Injustice?
Yeah, in the Injustice game.
He was in the, Justice League, in Bruce Timm's Justice League.
Okay.
He was a badass there. Cut
right.
off his own freaking hand and then replaced it with a big scythe and, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so, like, let's stop making fun of Aquaman people and start making fun of Flash because...
Well, I think the reason people make fun of Aquaman is because of how he was depicted in the Super Friends back in the 80s. And because his only ability was to talk to animals, like sea animals. That was it.
Not even regular animals.
Right.
That's animal man.
No emphasis. Right. No emphasis on his abilities to manipulate water or the fact that he's actually really strong. That throw all that out.
Right.
He could just talk to animals, and they found a way to work that into episodes. Yes, and breathe underwater, and that's it.
But, well, and Robot Chicken is not doing him any. You know, favors because they're constantly
lampooning him on these things.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I've seen some of that, not a lot of it, but yeah, it's doesn't always fit.
Yeah, one character that. Well, you know, actually, no. I was going to say something that was wrong. I was going to say one character was never copied by Marvel, but in a way, he was, and that was Namor.
The Submariner.
Right.
Yeah. But it was their answer to Aquaman, but they didn't really play him up as much as Aquaman.
No,
and he was never part of, like, he occasionally teamed up with the Fantastic Four, but he never really became part of the Avengers to make it
so on the nose.
He was a real jerk, too, from what I...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they took a different approach to the whole Atlantean-type civilization, that they wanted to be segregated and, you know, separate.
We were polluting
from,
their oceans and
right.
making them sick and killing them. Of course he was pissed off at us.
He was also making a statement against clothes, apparently, because, you know.
Yeah. Well, they get in the way.
Even Aquaman had, like, a shirt.
No, he lived underwater. What did he need clothes for? You know, you go swimming, you're in your trunks. That's it. That's all
but
he needed.
But if you're deep enough, you think you'd need some sort of thermal wear.
Though I had to think, too, also, because, you know, he flies by the wings on his ankles. When he flies out of the water into the air, he's going to get cold. So I don't know.
Yeah. But no, because he lives on the bottom of the ocean. It's really cold there already.
Yeah, so he must have a real high tolerance.
Yeah. Either they just have naturally high body temperature and high metabolism to maintain that, or they're just used to being at a much lower temperature register in general.
So his superpower is he can live in Alaska.
There you
and
go.
And not be uncomfortable.
In his Speedo.
All right, so there we go. So Aquaman is better than Namor. There we go. Settled.
Perhaps.
Yeah. All right, aren't you glad you're listening to this show? Because, you know, am I breaking the fourth wall by doing that? Probably.
Fourth wall? This isn't a play.
It's not a play.
We are not characters in some sort of...
So what, the
we hope you're out there listening.
Yes.
Are you out there listening? Can you hear us?
Tap once for yes.
Tap twice for no.
If you're listening to us, send us a dollar.
No. We don't want to solicit that.
Yet.
I'm not soliciting, I'm begging.
Right. If you listen to us, encourage advertisers to want to advertise with our show.
Yes.
That way it won't cost them anything, and it'll make us money that way. That's better. You don't want to... We're not going to make our fans pay for this.
No.
Actually, well, it's too bad. By listening to this, they're paying anyway.
That's true. They're paying with their time.
Their time, their sanity,
a few brain cells.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
But anyway, I think we've devolved a bit here.
Yeah.
All right, so your homework assignment, John, is to go see Iron Man 3 so we can finish Iron Man special.
Right. Yeah. And I do think we should also do an episode, which we can do without John at some point, talking about the Arrow TV series. Because I think that's a good one that if you aren't watching it, you might want to be watching it.
Is that on Netflix? I'll watch that, because I've been watching Continuum on Netflix. And
I don't know.
It's good.
I don't know if it's on Netflix
or not. Do you have on demand? Do you have cable at home?
Yeah.
It should be on demand.
Well, but it's CW. They don't tend to keep the entire season available on demand. They're kind of short rein on that. So you might be able to get, like, the last 5 episodes.
All right. When we get out of here, I'll actually just log into my account and see what's available.
Yeah, because they're technically still in season 1, but on, like, episode 20 or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's one thing that upsets me, because Continuum, because it's in Canada, only 13 episodes per season.
Right.
Which...
And season 2 technically has already started in Canada, but we're not getting it till June.
Not to change topics, have you guys been watching... Warehouse 13 this season?
Oh, I know. Yes. It just came on. I thought they had killed it, and then I saw new episodes being taped on my DVR. So,
yeah. So you thought it ended with the world, with everyone dying?
Pretty much.
Because that was the...
Well, sci-fi
drop shows all the time. Like, they dropped Alphas.
And that's how Alphas...
After the cliffhanger.
Alphas was...
But I liked it. I enjoyed it, I was invested. I was ready to keep going with it. And because what I think Alphas did was, it was the version of Heroes that was more believable and didn't forget that humans existed.
Sure.
I think that it worked within normal society more realistically than Heroes did. I think that's where Heroes sort of went off the deep end, in that it became just a soap opera about heroes and villains, and no longer, you know, really addressed the human race.
Yeah, they're flying around, and what about all those people looking up at you going, it's a bird, it's a plane, who the hell is that?
Right. Whereas Alphas was always about, you know, these misfits in society, and taking those things that set them apart and making strengths out of them. And they left it on a huge cliffhanger with so many open questions, and then they went and canceled it.
I think one of the issues with almost any team superhero show that's been on in the last decade, and people are going to... There's not a lot. Yeah, I think there's 3 in that list, is that they start out with a good team, they start out with a good idea, and then they quickly become too complicated.
Right, they get complicated and go off the rails.
And I think it's like, you know, right, and the writers feel like they have to make it more complicated to keep it driving forward, and it's like, well, no, just write good arcs for your characters.
Yeah.
And I'll keep it driving forward.
They did that with Stargate. Stargate was wonderful, you know, until right. they started losing, you know, actors.
Yeah, but they managed to to fluidly transition with those changes over time. So I think they managed not to fall into a trap of sucking because they lost someone important.
All right. So yeah. Next time
we can go over that. Yeah.
Next time,
lots of things we can
discuss. We'll start off with the we'll talk about Warehouse 13 and last night's episode. James Marsters was on it. He was funny. He was really good in it.
Yeah, I saw. I haven't seen last night's yet, but I did see he was in it. In the premiere for the season.
Oh, that's right, because I watched both episodes last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was the premiere. That's what I'm thinking of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good in that.
Yeah, he was good in that.
And I do like they left it open that, you know, he's not dead, so.
Yes. The whole thing, though, with the... I love Warehouse 13, I enjoy it, but it is... it's upbeat to the point where it's kind of hokey. like just the way that Pete acts and the way that Micah goes along with the way he acts, it just seems a little unrealistic in the real world. But at the same time, I enjoy the show.
Yes.
Quite all much.
Right. Well, on that note, I'll sign off for now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. We need a sign off. I'm going to stick with what I've been using, and you guys can argue about it later.
Okay.
So don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.